This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Hey, it's Rich. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of The Zeoli Show. Do us a favor and subscribe to the podcast, rate the podcast, and tell your friends. Either that or I'll leave to become President Trump's chief of staff. Thanks for listening.
Rich Zeoli Show Podcast.
The president last night did what he was supposed to do last night, which is announce he's running for president without actually saying it, and he did what he was supposed to do well. Welcome back to the show. Glad you are here, The Zeoli Show, on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. I will not be here on the show tomorrow. I will be on the air tomorrow, though. I'm filling in for Mark Levin again tomorrow night. Honored that the great one asked me to do it again. I'm very excited for that. And so tomorrow, Dan Gaffney will be in. Still do a live local show, and then, you know, I'll be on right at 6. So it'll be 6:05, 6:06. Hope you'll be there for that. I have to tell you that this State of the Union address, you have to look at it from two perspectives, in my opinion. The first perspective being, as somebody who lives and breathes politics, you got to look at it differently from somebody who is just an American who tunes into this. And I know that's hard to believe, but there are actually people out there who don't watch cable news every day, all day long, or at all. There are people that just don't care. They come to vote, they vote, and that's it. And they walk away from things. And the interesting thing is that these addresses tend to get audiences of people who are not particularly engaged very often in politics. It's why they have them on ABC, CBS, and NBC. Because as much as we lament those networks, they are still how most Americans get their news from the big major over the air. So a lot of places still don't even have cable. People don't. I mean, people still use antennas. But that notion of people that go, all right, I was going to watch my shows at 9 o'clock. I'll tune into the State of the Union address. Among those people, they all gave the president really high marks last night. So the media did what the media does. And right away they went and they denounced their own polls. I don't even understand the purpose of doing a poll and then come, because they cost money, and then turning around and going, yeah, but I mean, it's don't believe anything we just told you. CNN, for the second year in a row, all right, discrediting their own poll showing positive State of the Union reaction. Cut 8.
At least those who watch, this is our first look at a brand new instant poll, but it is among speech watchers. So I just want to stress here that for a State of the Union address, the president's partisans, his supporters, tend to turn out to watch the speech. This is true of a president.
Okay. Right. But what about all the other people who turn out to watch the speech? In addition to the partisans that turn out to, I got news for you. A lot of partisans, probably if anyone was going to turn off the TV last night, it would be them. Because it's long and it's flowery and everything like this. And they go, I'm with the guy. I'm moving on. I'm going to watch. I'm going to do something else. The people that are watching that you're polling, idiot, are the people that are not his partisans. Otherwise, why do a State of the Union address? All right, keep going.
This is true of a president of either party. So tonight, we saw a heavily Republican-skewed audience turn out to watch the president's speech. But look at this, a very positive reaction from those who watched the speech tonight. 59% very positive, 17% somewhat positive, 23% negative. I want you to see that very positive number, how that compares to Donald Trump's performances in the last couple of years when he's given a speech to a joint session of Congress like this. You'll see that he was, again, tonight at 59%. He was down at 48% very positive a year ago. Back when he first started the job and he addressed the Congress, he was at 57%. So he's back up. This is a speech-watching audience that was more receptive this year than last year to what they saw. But here's the rub.
Even
this
right,
very favorable audience, yes, to Donald Trump does not believe his call for bipartisanship is going to meet with success.
Oh.
Take a look. Will Donald Trump increase bipartisan cooperation? A majority of speech watchers, again, a heavily Republican audience, 53% say no, 39% say yes. So all that talk of bipartisanship seems to be being met by with the people who watch the speech by a healthy dose of skepticism, Wolf.
Wolf. Okay, so thank you for that analysis, discrediting your own poll. Why you do the poll, then, I have no idea. And today, CNN will tell us what we're supposed to have taken from the speech. NBC bashed the president's speech as incoherent, and cheers, of course, strong Stacey Abrams. Shocking. Cut 10.
Well, this speech was if they're the only coherent, like, moment, when I say coherent, meaning where there was a thematic push where you felt like they had a point to make, was on immigration and the standoff with Congress. Everything else felt like it was all meant to be just additive to the basic point that he wanted to make about his wall and immigration. Like, that was the most well-thought-out part of the speech and well-argued part of the speech. May not agree with it. Everything else felt like additive to just stay focused.
We've been listening to Stacey Abrams, who, of course, came very close to winning the Georgia governor's race, but did not. She's a Democrat. She was the minority leader of the Georgia House for some time, and that is not an easy thing to do. There are lots and lots of tales of people who've done the opposition party's response, and it's not gone so well for
them. Take the president on directly, but it was clear who she was talking to.
She had 10 minutes. One thing she didn't do is let the Republicans get away with the shutdown. That was something that was not mentioned whatsoever during the State of the Union, but she let them have it.
She did.
She let them have it.
She said that it was a stunt. It was a stunt engineered by the President of the United States. She said making their livelihoods a pawn for political games is a disgrace. That was a really important statement. A very effective speaker. And also denouncing voter fraud. She says that is real and racism. This was a strong speech, but also at the end saying we don't want the president to fail. We want him to succeed, but we want him to tell the truth. I thought that she hit a lot of strong points there.
Did you, Andrea Mitchell? That's amazing that you're so up the middle like that. Chuck Todd blasted Trump's State of the Union address as theater of the absurd before the speech even happened. Before the speech even happened. And Brian Williams was taken aback by Trump's graphic language on abortion. This is great now. It starts with Chris Matthews in this speech, and then Brian Williams taken aback by this.
And then added a little soupçon of neocon in there, the Iranian thing, the Venezuelan thing, and then tying Bernie Sanders to Venezuela. His version of socialism is, of course, Northern Europe. It's Denmark. He said, no, your version of socialism is Venezuela. And it was pretty strong right-wing stuff.
Graphic language on abortion, which is
powerful.
Kind of a first for a national speech in my time.
How about the governor of Virginia's comments on abortion? Was that graphic, Brian Williams? I'm curious. We'd all like to know. And then Chris Matthews last night was really in rare form, as you can imagine. He was off his rocker. ABC News, I mean, all of them just coming out last night. They were marveling at Abrams' energetic delivery and Pelosi's reactions to Trump. This features chief anchor, unbiased journalist George Stephanopoulos.
Mary Bruce, it was fascinating to watch House Speaker Nancy Pelosi through that hour and 20 minutes.
Really remarkable to watch her reaction throughout that entire speech. At moments, she seemed to be keeping track of the president's remarks there, looking over the papers in front of her. And look, she made very clear where she disagreed with the president when he issued what was a pretty stark warning to Democrats that they should not be investigating him if they want to maintain any hope for compromise. Pelosi shook her head. You heard audible groans from many of the Democrats there. That is something that Nancy Pelosi simply is not going to rein in. She's made that very clear that if the president expects them at all to dial back their oversight responsibilities, he can think twice about that. And then, of course, on the issue of the wall, because that is the most pressing issue here before this Congress, George. We have just 10 days for lawmakers to somehow come together and try and strike a deal to prevent yet another shutdown. The president made very clear. He said he thinks walls work, walls save lives. A lot of Democrats disagreeing with that sentiment, and Nancy Pelosi making very clear that that is still a huge sticking point between she and the president.
Big smile there from Stacey Abrams. Maybe the toughest speech in politics to pull off. She made her bid with vivid language and energetic delivery, direct shots at the president. Matt Dowd, she didn't say the president's name, but the contrast could not have been more clear.
A more dramatic, and I thought as I was watching that, that was very difficult to hold that stage, and she held it well. Ooh. Is she actually had more language of bipartisanship than the president did in his speech. The president said he was coming with comedy. And the Congress, the Democrats, responded with comedy, sort of laughing at him, grinning at him. And I think the Americans looking at Washington today think it's a tragedy. But I think she did a wonderful job in that moment.
I think there was a real tension tonight in the president's speech. We've been noting it. He did want to at least appear to be reaching out to Democrats and did get, as Terry said, applause on trade, applause on prescription drugs, also on that prison reform. But you also saw real energy in his voice, in his body language when he had those lines taking on Democrats.
Well, yes. And George would know about taking on Democrats, would he not? When he took him out in the primary against Bill Clinton in 1992. The president had a lot of great lines last night. I particularly loved this line that he said last night. Cut number four.
An economic miracle is taking place in the United States, and the only thing that can stop it are foolish wars, politics, or ridiculous partisan investigations.
That's right. And you know what? Today, a lot of people on the left said, well, he must be very scared of these investigations to make that comment. Endless wars is also a theme the president pointed out last night, and I was very happy about that fact. I was very happy the president talked about that. I was also very happy the president last night talked about abortion, which I think, again, as Brian Williams, very graphic language, very graphic. He really did a great job last night of pointing out the Democrats' hypocrisy on the issue, which was fantastic. He lectured them on socialism. And then this magical thing happened as the president talked about more women in the workforce, cut six.
As we work to defend our people's safety, we must also ensure our economic resurgence continues at a rapid pace. No one has benefited more from a thriving economy than women, who have filled 58% of the newly created jobs last year.
Now listen to the applause, the whistles. Right? Listen. Now, what's happening here is that in the crowd, one of the Democrat women, and you could stop for a sec, Rick, one of the Democrat women turns and does the two thumbs to herself, like this guy, only this girl. She goes, yeah, me, as if, I took the job of a man, meaning a guy who was the congressman there. And all the other women in white, in solidarity with the governor of Virginia, they all turned around and went, oh, yeah, me too. Yeah, me. And they all went, woo. And they started high-fiving. They're like, yeah, woo. And they thought they got the president. They thought they got him in a trap. And they thought he didn't think that they were going to react that way. I think he knew exactly how they reacted, how they would react. I think that was the plan. So he got them up on their feet, and they're cheering, and they're happy, and they're all woo-wooing. Woo! And they're thinking, oh, he doesn't realize we took the jobs of men. Look at us, show him. Woo, 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 woo. And then all of a sudden, the president gets into something else they like. And they stay on their feet. And I'll play you that after the news. 855-839-1210. Your reaction to the State of the Union address. What did you think of the speech? I think the president did an outstanding job because he did what he was supposed to do. This was not a speech to the base. This was a post-partisan speech. And I thought he did a great job. So there they are on their feet, hooting and hollering, the ladies in white, in solidarity with the governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, I guess, because he also likes to dress in white. I mean, at least they didn't wear blackface, right? And so there's the president. He's got them all up. They're all hooting and hollering. And people in the media are going, ooh, he didn't realize that was going to happen. Now, ooh, he didn't realize that, right? And then the president transitions into this.
You weren't supposed to do that. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. All Americans can be proud that we have more women in the workforce than ever before.
This is great. They're up on their feet, and they're happy. This is good.
Don't sit yet. You're going to like this. And exactly one century after Congress passed the constitutional amendment giving women the right to vote, We also have more women serving in Congress than at any time before.
Whoop whoop, right? They're loving this. They're on their feet. He looks magnanimous. Chanting, they're happy, the applause, USA, they're loving this, women, women rule, up on their feet. I asked Greg to leave the applause in here for a reason, by the way. Because normally we would edit this out, but I wanted you to hear this crescendo, this...
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Very great. And congratulations, that's great.
And then the president is going to talk about paid family leave and transition into that, which is really amazing, as the third act in the little trap he sent for the left.
To help support working parents, the time has come to pass school choice for Americans' children. I'm so proud to be the first president to include in my budget a plan for nationwide paid family leave.
There you go.
So that every new parent has the chance to bond with their newborn child.
Yes! Back up on there, on their feet again. Democrat women, they're excited, they're fired up. This is all pro-women, rah, rah, rah. Some conservatives are going, well, what's happening right now? What is this?
There could be no greater contrast to the beautiful image of a mother holding her infant child than the chilling displays our nation saw in recent days.
And they're all down in their seats.
Lawmakers in New York cheered with delight upon the passage of legislation that would allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb moments from birth. These are living, feeling, beautiful babies who will never get the chance to share their love and their dreams with the world. And then we had the case of the governor of Virginia, where he stated he would execute a baby after birth. To defend the dignity of every person, I am asking Congress to pass legislation to prohibit the late-term abortion of children who can feel pain in the mother's womb.
Now, none of the ladies in white are standing up now. Now, I want to ask you a question. If you're just watching this and you're just on the sidelines and you're not really in, you know, in the game, so to speak, like I am, or maybe you are, because you are obsessed with this stuff. You're watching this. You see all the women on their feet. They're cheering. You're feeling good, right? You know, paid family leave, which, look, I mean, I'm more to the right on this stuff than most people, so I don't like government programs, but probably most people agree. Yeah, that should happen, right? Women in the workplace, good. That's great. Yeah, yeah. Women in Congress, yeah, that's great. That's great. And then all of a sudden, and partial birth abortion, late-term abortion, the president says late-term abortion should be banned. And most people go, yeah, that's that makes sense. Right, that's reasonable. That makes sense. Yeah, you know, kid's almost born. Yeah. And none of those same women are standing up and cheering and hooting and hollering. What does that tell you? What does that show you about the state of the Democratic Party versus the state of the Republican Party? The Republican Party, the president, Donald Trump, he's up there. He's for both, right? He's for protecting, you know, kids in the womb. He's for the end of the late-term abortion, which, by the way, that didn't used to be controversial. There was a time when the Democratic Party also believed late-term abortion should be illegal, except in very rare circumstances. That used to not be a controversial opinion. What he said last night should not have been controversial. So I think it really shows the two sides of where the left is today, and that is that the party is now extremely, very extreme on the abortion issue. This is no longer your dad's Democrat Party, because that party used to believe that late-term abortion should never happen, except in very rare, rare, rare circumstances. That was just something everybody agreed with, like the wall. I mean, like a physical barrier. Everybody just kind of believed in that. And the battle, the discussion used to be about the first trimester, the early stages of a pregnancy. That used to be the debate. And the president exposing how the party has moved so far to the left on that issue is part of an overall theme, which is that on that issue and also on the issue of the economy, the Democrats have also moved incredibly far to the left. So then he brings up Venezuela and socialism. And again, it's all about the crowd reaction. He's saying something here that most people agree with. We should be free. We should be liberty and independence. And then you see the reaction of Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and you realize Democrats, they're not standing up for saying we're not going to be socialist. Cut five.
Weeks ago, the United States officially recognized the legitimate government of Venezuela and its new president, Juan Guaido. We stand with the Venezuelan people in their noble quest for freedom, and we condemn the brutality of the Maduro regime, whose socialist policies have turned that nation from being the wealthiest in South America into a state of abject poverty and despair. Here in the United States, we are alarmed by the new calls to adopt socialism in our country. America was founded on liberty and independence, and not government coercion, domination, and control. We are born free, and we will stay free.
They're not clapping for that. And again, you know, if you are somebody like me, I have chills when I hear that. I do. I love that. I think most people, though, go, yeah, I don't want to. We shouldn't be socialists. We should be free. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. That's good. And then they see Bernie Sanders red in the face, angry. Chuck Schumer with his look on his face. Democrats sitting on their hands again. So now, remember, we've seen the Democrats sitting on their hands over ending late-term abortions, socialism. But we have seen them getting up and hoot and hollering when they talked about more women in Congress. And that, I think for, I'm talking about the average person who votes and then goes back to their life, you know. They're happy, things are going well, money in their pocket, they're good about the economy. They tune in last night to a State of the Union address, as many Americans do, and it's really the only time they ever see the president or something. They watch that, they see that circus, they see the Democrats respond, and the Democrats blew it because they could not help themselves. Their hatred of Trump so much they couldn't even stand to applaud that we will always be free. That's amazing to me. That's amazing when you think about that in terms of the difference between the current Democratic Party and the President of the United States. This was a 2020 campaign speech. This was him saying, I'm going to try to be a postpartisan president. I'm going to throw some things out there the left's going to like. I'm going to throw something the right's going to like. And you're going to see that they're too extreme on the Democrat side, and they hate me too much. They're not going to give me anything. And they're going to just show you how out of it they are, just how far left they are. And I think it was, you know, an absolute home run from that perspective last night. Absolutely. The other thing, too, is when the president talked about endless wars, getting us out of endless wars. I love this part. This is something, of course, that's also probably more controversial with my side of the aisle than their side of the aisle. And I give him great credit for saying this stuff last night. Cut seven.
Our brave troops have now been fighting in the Middle East for almost 19 years. In Afghanistan and Iraq, nearly 7,000 American heroes have given their lives. More than 52,000 Americans have been badly wounded.
We have spent more than $7 trillion in fighting wars in the Middle East. As a candidate for president, I loudly pledged a new approach. Great nations do not fight endless wars. When I took office, ISIS controlled more than 20,000 square miles in Iraq and Syria just 2 years ago. Today, we have liberated virtually all of the territory from the grip of these bloodthirsty monsters. Now, as we work with our allies to destroy the remnants of ISIS, it is time to give our brave warriors in Syria a warm welcome home. I have also accelerated our negotiations to reach, if possible, a political settlement in Afghanistan. The opposing side is all very happy to be negotiating. Our troops have fought with unmatched valor, and thanks to their bravery, we are now able to pursue a possible political solution to this long and bloody conflict.
It's great. And you know what? I think most Americans also hope that we can at some point wrap this up, wrap it up in the Middle East. I certainly do. It's one of the reasons I thought Donald Trump was terrific. One of those positions early on, I thought, wow, this is amazing. It was only he and Rand Paul saying this stuff back then. That was it. In Virginia, another scandal's a-brewing. But New Mexico Governor Michelle Grisham shared a clip of herself literally running through walls in response to the president's State of the Union address Tuesday night. I always say President Trump brings out the best in the worst people. He really just, they give it their all, don't they? They really do. So the governor starts by discussing New Mexico's ranking and then proceeds to now run through walls. Go ahead.
I'm Michelle Lujan Grisham, New Mexico's 49th in employment and 50th for schools. We got to bust through some walls to make changes. I'll create public and private partnerships to rebuild our infrastructure. We need more apprenticeships and skills training. And we have billions in the permanent fund to invest in schools and small businesses. And here's what I think of Trump's wall.
Well, at least she didn't do it in blackface. So there's that. Okay? Over in Virginia now, we have a new apology letter from the Attorney General. So we'll see. Let's review, shall we? The governor of Virginia admitted to wearing blackface to do the moonwalk, right? And asked the press corps, don't y'all have your own blackface stories? I'll share them all now. The lieutenant governor of Virginia is now embroiled in a Me Too scandal and apparently said, according to several sources, including Larry Sabato of the University of Virginia, he said, F that B about the woman who claims that he raped her. I mean, she's now coming out and saying exactly what happened. He forced himself upon her and made her do an oral act. OK, so there's that. And then the guy third in line puts out an apology letter today because he used to wear blackface, too. This is the Democratic Party in Virginia. Right there. The triumphant. The trifecta. Right here. So here we go. I have a little bit of his apology for you right now. Here we go. I put this warning out on Twitter earlier. The only thing I do when it comes to a Southern governor is a combination of a Foghorn Leghorn and Frank Underwood. Here we go. The very bright light that is shining on Virginia right now is sparking a painful, but I think we all hope, important conversation. The stakes are high, and I have lived my life with poor judgment. Worse yet, I've caused some level of pain to others. For example, in the 1980, in the year 1980, when nobody ever heard of a rapper named Curtis Blow, me and my buddies in Virginia used to dress up like him and wear wigs and blackface. Now, luckily, the media's only talked about the blackface and not the Afro wigs. I'm assuming they'll get to that in good time. I know I've caused pain for people, but our love of Curtis Blow and his records... It sounds ridiculous because it is, because it's absolutely ridiculous. It was a one-time occurrence, and I accept full responsibility for my conduct. I am ashamed of myself. I've lived with this ever since. Every day it's tormented me as I sit at home, listen to my Curtis Blow LPs, and think, why did I ever think it was okay to put on blackface and a wig? Now, it's true I've called for the governor to resign over wearing blackface, but I'm also, in addition to being a giant hypocrite, a guy who wants to stay in office. So all I'm going to do right now is apologize to everybody and say, who among us hasn't put on a little shoe polish to look like a rapper here and there? Now, Greg, the point you made earlier was that Curtis was not a real big force back then.
No, in 1980, when this guy is claiming that this happened, right? 1980. So this song, "The Breaks," came out in 1980.
Hands, everybody!
And it was a hit, but it was a hit in a very regional area, like the South Bronx, which is where hip hop started. But the thought that somebody in Virginia listen to this, and not only listen to it, thought it up.
How dare you, sir?
To dress up like this is just, I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all.
How dare you, sir, call out my integrity? We used to listen to the rap channel on Sirius XM all the time back then.
There was no...
Rap was very popular in Virginia.
It was not. It just wasn't.
I beg to differ! Me and my guys would drive around all night listening to rap music. You couldn't go anywhere without hearing a little Curtis Blow. And Snoop Doggy Dogg.
I don't even know if he was born yet.
I loved me some Snoop Dogg. I got a dog. My mama said, what do you want to name him? I said, Snoop Dogg. I beg to differ with your characterization that I would not have known who Curtis Blow was in 1980 in Virginia.
He would not have. He just wouldn't have.
How dare you?
I'm sorry.
Rock your shoes and these are this was our prom theme. Every good old Virginian would make himself some grits in the morning and Curtis Blow in the afternoon, sir. I said to my mama, Mama, when you go out today, get me grits and shoe polish.
Time for me to do
a little Curtis Blow karaoke. He has acknowledged he's contributed to the pain of all of Virginia. So there you go. That is the apology from the Attorney General of Virginia right there. So he's very upset with you, Greg. I mean, calling out his integrity like that is upset.
I'm just, if this was maybe 2 or 3 years later, I could maybe buy it. But in 1980, when this song came out, no, I just don't buy it.
Oh, God. Yes. Honestly... Whoever is advising these Democrats, it is amazing. Johnny Cook makes that point. This guy writes this big, long, soul-searching letter that I've contributed to the pain Virginians have felt this week is the greatest shame I've ever felt.
The greatest shame.
Forgiveness in instances like these is a complicated process, one that necessarily cannot and should not be decided by anyone but those directly affected by the transgressor. Should forgiveness be possible or appropriate at all? To that end, I have called Curtis Blow and I said, Curtis, can you forgive me? Can we do a rap duet together? Perhaps I can sip on some gin and juice.
No, I don't think you would.
And you, sir, can talk about being in the hood.
No.
And together, we can heal Virginia with all of its hurt. From the bottom of my heart, I am deeply, deeply sorry for the pain I've caused with this revelation. And so mad at whoever leaked this to the press. He's shocked. Although the shame of the moment has haunted me for decades, and though my disclosure of it now pains me immensely, what I am feeling in no way compares to the betrayal, the shock, and the deep pain that Virginians of color may be feeling.
So bad.
Where they have deserved to feel heard, respected, understood, and honestly represented, I fear my actions have contributed to them being forced to revisit and feel a historical pain that has never been allowed to become history. Wow. It's deep, is it not?
Yeah.
It's very, very deep.
the fact that he was soul searching and this has troubled him for years. I just can't.
My days, I turned on WRAP. That was our local rap station in 1980, Virginia.
That's the thing. Not even like radio stations were playing hip hop at that time.
My first teacher was Dr. Dre. No, nobody was doing rap back
no.
then? So you're not buying this excuse,
I'm not. It's
Curtis
not.
I mean,
I don't know what I don't know why he would lie about that, but you know, it's just not. It's not possible.
Oh, these people are amazing. Amazing. But they'll stay in office because the guy who would take over is a Republican. If the blackface-wearing governor resigns and the rapist lieutenant governor resigns and then the blackface-wearing attorney general resigns, then the only guy left is a Republican.
Oh, my God.
So that'll never happen because they're going to do redistricting in 2020, so that will never happen. They'll put up with two black faces and a rapist over a Republican taking over in Virginia. So that's the Democratic Party right now. Two black faces and a racist. And a rapist.
A rapist, yeah.
Two black faces and a rapist over a Republican.
Oh, God.
Yes. Anyway, but then we also have the now I've changed her name.
Uh-oh.
From former Native American to undocumented Native American. Today, Elizabeth Warren has come out that she is an undocumented Native American, an undocumented citizen of a tribe. And we'll share a little bit of that nonsense with you as well. The Democratic Party is, they're doing great. They're really, really doing great here, are they not? Okay.
We're back with the Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Not for long, because it turns out... Turns out we have a issue tonight, a scheduling matter. hang on, let me get... Evil Jared just informed me that we will be off the air at 5:55. Due to a series of FCC violations, we will now do the Curtis Blow Hour. That's not true?
No, it's not the Curtis Blow.
Our format will flip to rap at 5:55 to placate the Attorney General of Virginia. It's not true either. No. It's also fake news. Awesome. We have a basketball game on, I believe.
We have Temple.
Temple lovely, football tonight. Basketball at 5:55.
Blow if you want. I mean, get it started if you want to.
Every day in Virginia, I start my day with this. Actually, instead of Curtis Blow, I was going to get into Elizabeth Warren, but now I really don't have a lot of time to do that. Just very quickly, Elizabeth Warren today also apologized for sending out a card to join the Texas State Bar and writing down that she was American Indian. Okay, American Indian. Today, she gave a press conference, sort of, and she acknowledged doing so, but saying that the reason why is because she is an undocumented Native American, an undocumented tribal member. Let's play a little clip of that, shall we?
About tribal citizenship and tribal sovereignty and for harm caused. I am also sorry for not being more mindful of this decades ago. Tribes and only tribes determine tribal citizenship. I had a good conversation with Chief Baker. He was very gracious.
And Chief Baker, Bigfoot, said to me, you are an undocumented member of this tribe. You're an undocumented citizen of this tribe. So I am officially now calling Elizabeth Warren the undocumented Native American. Okay? She's an undocumented citizen of the tribe. It's amazing.
Continue to talk about issues and continue to work on issues that matter deeply to Indian country.
Of which I'm not part of.
Continue to work on.
Of which I've never been part of.
So, Senator.
So I offered him some peyote and we said we would kind of veg out together and we'd talk about how I can maybe get my paperwork in. The undocumented Native American Elizabeth Warren. Really, the Democratic Party is in an amazing, amazing state right now. It's absolutely amazing. Tomorrow, you're going to have Dan Gaffney in. Dan's terrific. Dan will be hosting the show for me tomorrow so that I can prep to fill in for Mark Levin tomorrow night. So please stay throughout the whole day tomorrow and don't turn the station off for a second, all right? Please do that. We'd appreciate it very, very much. And then, of course, you'll have me on Levin's show nationally. By the way, tomorrow. So, and with that, I'm going to be breaking out my Curtis Blow on the Levin show. Mr. Producer,
you think he's going to let you do that?
I think that's probably against the rules. Mr. Producer, I say. In fact, that's the one rule I have. If you do Foghorn Leghorn on this show, you will never be asked back.
No.
That'd be worse than somebody filling in on the Glenn Beck show and endorsing Obama. I'm not mentioning names.
Can we not?
I'm not.
We have to do this.
We don't need to do that.
We need to do
we
this.
We don't. Now. Are we still on the air? Yeah, I thought we were off the air.
We need to do this right now.
We need to do it.
Who won Twitter?
I'm giving it to Bob Irving. Elephant Thrower, he says rich, but can the New Mexico governor run through an enhanced barrier? Enhanced barrier.
Thank you, Flemington Furs, for sponsoring Twitter. Flemington Furs, what fabulous feels like. Bye.
Racioli 3 till 6. Talk Radio 1210. WPHT.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.